So, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed your lunch. Let me welcome Steve French, who has probably been deeper in SMB than anybody else of us in whatever ancient times he has been responsible for important parts of OS2. He's somebody member. He's, as you can see from the slides, he's within IBM, and he's going to talk about one of the hardest problems we have to solve in the future, how to supply slash home to 1,000 Linux boxes when you want to do migration. Welcome, Steve.
Can you all hear? Good. Well, I've been doing SMB clients and servers for a long time, as Volker mentioned. I think this is year 17. And you know, you don't think about why are we still here with SIFS? Why are we still talking about this ancient protocol? Well, obviously Windows matters in the enterprise, but it's more than that. It's not actually a very bad. It's a reasonable protocol, despite what Jeremy has said in the past. It has some advantages. It's lighter weight in some ways than what NFS uses, and it maps surprisingly well to the semantics needed, especially with these new extensions we've been developing. And has very broad server support, which I think is little thought about. I just got back from Connectathon about a month or so ago, and it still astounds me how many servers are still in development on weird platforms you've never heard of. And there are companies like Sun that have multiple SMB servers. Of course, IBM has had more SMB servers on more platforms probably than anyone. And you know, if it weren't that, it would be the 200 million Windows machines that seem to roll out every few minutes. But this is really an amazing protocol. We have broad server support out of the box and reasonable function. It's probably useful to go back in time a little bit and look at it as a standard. Many of you guys may have seen Barry Feigenbaum, 1984, the birth of the SMB protocol, which became SIFS, all the way through 2003, when we first started talking about these POSIX SIFS extensions, partly in response to a talk Jeremy gave, partly in response to some of our customers who wanted better Linux to Samba support. And we made a proposal. Incrementally, we've been adding to the existing SIFS Unix extensions and improving function, while simultaneously improving the function to Windows servers as best we can with compensations. From 2004 to 2005, we added things like POSIX ACLs, ability to support POSIX paths, support for Linux StatFS extensions, and also very large read and write. And then, as of a few minutes ago, we have the server support working, literally a few minutes ago, we have the server support working for all of the Connectathon test cases for byte range locking, advisory style. And, you know, you guys are the first to know. 5 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago. The client side, I checked in a few changes last night for one bug we found, and then this morning, or this lunchtime, we got the remaining server bug. We'll do additional testing and may find additional problems, but that's a big milestone because advisory byte range locking over SIFS was something that was very hard to do. Obviously, SIFS is mandatory byte range locking historically. Now, why is IBM involved in SIFS? It's not just because of Barry Feigenbaum. It's not just because of people like me. We have a fairly large Samba team, Jim McDonough over there, and I think you've heard talks from, oh, there's Alex behind you, good. And, you know, obviously Tridge, as well as some of the talks you've heard today by IBMers actually out there in the field doing these kind of implementations. For some reason, customers expect us to be good at this, partly because of, you know, we've had 20 different platforms we put SMB servers on probably. And we've had so many different implementations, we've had some practice. But there's another very obvious reason. We're very interested in giving back into the Linux community changes to make Linux better. And this is an area where we had both some experience and as well as a glaring gap in Linux. Now, there's an attitude problem we need to sort of level set here. We're at a Samba conference. I don't want to ignore Samba here. But there is a point at which we spend a lot more time thinking about how do we make Microsoft Office work perfectly It's very important. Everybody wants to make Microsoft Office work perfectly to Samba. But in addition, we have to make sure OpenOffice works perfectly to Samba. And part of that motivation is what drives some of these Unix extensions, trying to finish the little tiny ioctls, fcontrols, and differences in the protocol. So to Samba, we get perfect semantics. Because clearly in NFS, you're not getting perfect semantics. In some cluster file systems, you're getting close. But SIFS should be able to do about as well. Let's talk about the high-level components of SIFS. SIFS, unlike most client implementations, is about 95% in kernel, 90% in kernel. It doesn't do some of the things that the Samba client tools do well. Samba has client tools like NET that can do simple user administration. And obviously, SMB cackles can do access control changes, and SMB client can list shares in a domain. Oh, sorry, it can list shares and list servers in a domain. In addition, WinBind handles the PAM and NSS libraries. The other piece of SIFS code historically is the mount helper, relatively small, unlike SMBFS. The mount helper currently doesn't do as much as with many network file system protocols. There's also a UMount helper, which is generally not needed. There are some cases where you might want to run it set UID, but UMount SIFS is not really needed in most environments. Now, there's some interesting ways to configure SIFS. We don't use SMB conf. We could, I guess, and it wouldn't be very hard to wrap some things that grabbed out of SMB conf and pass these equivalents on the mount command. But there are three ways that PARMs are passed to SIFS. One is at module installation time. These are global things that are set for the module as a whole, including the maximum buffer size, because we set a pool of buffers for SIFS to use, and we have to know how big those are going to be. By default, those are just over 16K to be able to handle things like the default read dir size that we're going to negotiate. It also sets the minimum number of small and large buffers that are in the memory pool. Obviously, when you're really low on memory, you can't go out to the kernel and ask for more memory because the kernel's low on memory and it's trying to use you to page out the memory that it needs. So being able to set memory pools avoids deadlock cases when you're low on memory. And the minimum number of requests should map to, you know, the number of active threads you might have or processes you have that are accessing the network under heavy stress. In addition, if you want to override max mux, you can set the maximum number of pending requests this way. SIFS also has a fairly large number of distinct mount PARMs. I was looking at it and actually felt very guilty. How many of you guys saw Jerry Carter's talk on where he talked about SMB conf explosion? Okay, so you guys, we're at about 450 PARMs for SMB conf. I'm not there yet. But I felt guilty because, you know, I avoided SMB conf because I thought it might be a little hard to parse some of the things that, well, there are PARMs that are opposites of one another, you know, turning on or turning off something, right? I didn't double count those. But the distinct ones, 34 already. And I was starting to feel a little bit guilty. Maybe I need to think about shrinking that down. In any case, it's likely to grow. We'll be over 40 soon, I suspect. And these allow you to do things like turning on and off ACL support, turning off X-adders, turning on and off various security features. Now, the final way is at runtime. There's a set of things that can be changed for all mounts. Good idea. Oh, it works. Okay, so if you look at this proc here, we can do certain important things, mandating signing, disabling the Unix extensions. Some of these have to be done before the mount, and some of these can be done anytime at runtime. For example, disabling oplock or disabling metadata caching on lookup. And also, obviously, turning on debugging and various experimental features. For example, to enable the advisory locking that Jeremy and I were trying, it requires turning on this setting in proc. Okay, that's a little bit different than some of the other ones you've seen in the past. We also offer something that's confusing to a lot of users, two separate security models, one in which you trust the client and one in which you basically trust the server. So the traditional way that people mounted, let's say, SMBFS was they mounted with one user and they set a default UID and GID, file mode, and dir mode on the mount, and that guy owned all files. That UID owned all files remotely. And access checks were done against that default user they'd used for everyone. Well, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But it sort of implies that you trust the client, perhaps. There's another mode that SIFS offers, where multi-user mount is turned on. In multi-user mount, you have the mount repeated multiple times, so we have multiple SMB sessions set up, and the client will map the right UID depending on who's trying to access that mount point. And that's a little bit more overhead because you're mounting more than once the same directory, but it does allow you to do a form of multi-user mount, which is maybe somewhat more similar to what NFS does. You can also disable the local ACL checks. For some people, it makes no sense to check the mode locally. Why check the mode locally, right? I mean, the server's going to check this. In other cases, the reverse makes more sense because you trust the client. So that gives you a certain amount of flexibility. Multi-user mount will be more powerful, though, when we cooperate with WinBind and the credential caching mechanism to extract the users that PAM set. So there is a PAM SIFS module, and that's somewhat helpful, but it would be more elegant if we communicated with WinBind to extract the credential information as needed instead of forcing you to mount multiple times. Okay, so our focus for the last couple years, year and a half perhaps, has been stability-related. Very heavy stress cases, we're running low memory kinds of issues. The write path uses far less memory than it used to. SIFS used to have a major problem as you ran low on memory because we among all the file systems, used the most memory. Our buffers were the biggest. We used 17K buffers, which were huge by kernel standards. The kernel really prefers you don't get over one page, and there's very few cases where kernel has anybody allocating more than two pages out of the slab that are contiguous, and I was allocating eight. Unfortunately, 17K rounds up. And that write path is far better. The memory usage is far better. The POSIX compliance is far better. Two different ways. Obviously, services for Unix style. The SFU style, where we try to emulate POSIX semantics to Windows. And the other is with the POSIX extensions that Jeremy and others have been working on the server side. And the other focus is eliminating a few of the SMBFS gaps. Some of the kind of crazy things that you know people ask about, share mode security, you know, being able to mount to OS2. Thought it'll be kind of interesting to talk about some of the recent point releases. Advisory locking code improved or added. Connectathon drove out a lot of compensations for buggy servers. Servers that returned the wrong error code, servers that had crazy problems with mount races, and you know, 80% of the battle in a client is working around server bugs. The other 20% is trying not to be embarrassed about your own bugs. And we've spent a lot of time with a much broader set of servers this last Connectathon run than before. And so this, SIFS did a very good job against a wide variety of servers. The default write size is now increased to this rather strange size of 52K. The reason for this is a Linux kernel limitation of how big a page vec array is. We have we send these as an array, and 13 pages plus one header makes 14. But this is a reasonably efficient size for Samba and Windows, it turns out. Now we support reads and writes correctly over 64K. And this is actually kind of useful. There are certain things like PowerPC that can configure very large page sizes, and it's nice to be able to set reads and writes over 64K for those cases where the architecture supports very large pages. On 1.3.5 through 1.4.0 version, we especially improved performance over GigE. Turns out that on GigE there were certain network backoff things that were caused by congestion in the adapter, that we ran into, and that's largely improved. But of course, also increasing the size has helped a lot over GigE. Support for case-insensitive mounts. The map carriers option allowed us to be able to support illegal Windows path characters like question mark and asterisk and colon in PaaS to Windows. And various compensations to be able to make a FIFO remotely to a Windows box and get Windows to recognize a FIFO and things like that that are fun. Being able to handle mounts, but not all file operations, to some of the older servers like Windows 9X and Windows ME. And being able to disable byte range locking was necessary for some buggy, popular mail programs that that lock with the wrong handles, wrong file handles, so you can emulate locks only locally. The advisory locking code will fix that as well. And then being able to enable software suspend. So that's just a highlight of some of the recent point releases. To give you a sense for where we are, I think the SIFS grade has improved from maybe a C+, which was roughly what I would have said the last time I gave this talk, to about a B- overall. Stability is satisfactory. It's improved. It may even be satisfactory plus now. I think it's done better. And the performance is now satisfactory plus. There are areas where Windows is still faster than us, but largely we're faster than Windows in most cases now. And there are cases where we're faster than NFS client, which you know, had been the benchmark to beat. ACL support, we don't support SIFS ACLs, but we do support POSIX ACLs. And the SIFS ACL code is stuff we're working on. And we have reasonable POSIX compatibility now. Not as good as NFS version 4, not as good as ClusterFS, but pretty close. And better than a lot of cluster file systems. The Samba user space client has some advantages over SIFS. It supports, for example, SIFS ACLs. In addition, the Linux SMBFS does have one significant advantage over this SIFS client. The SMBFS supports Kerberos mounts, although it doesn't support signing. Okay. Wow. You want to go on? I'm curious what... I hadn't tried it to a Windows server. Yeah, the question was basically why... my question was why SMBFS didn't work to Windows servers but did work to Samba servers for Kerberized mounts. I know it's very buggy, but I'm curious about what...
Okay, so the reason that you can't do Kerberos to a Windows server with SMBFS is quite simple. SMBFS doesn't do the NT status codes. And so we have to turn off NT status at the session setup time. Yeah. You turn off NT status, then extended security doesn't work. The error code that we need to match on isn't there, but Windows won't even try. It simply says it gives you back an unsuccessful or one of the very generic error codes if you even try and send extended security. I suppose it assumes that if you're that old, you don't do NT status. How could you possibly do extended security? So that's the story in there.
Okay, so I think that this is something that that makes it even more important that I finish some code that I've been working on the plane. A lot of the focus, I'll show where we're going with SIFS in a minute, and we'll come back to that, but I think it's very important to think about this also in relation to NFS version 4 and how you'd set up that for trying to do secure mounts. Now, when are the cases you want to use SMBFS? We talked about KRv5 session setup here to Samba servers. NTLM v2 more or less works, but that code is almost complete. I've been saying that for a while, so I want to be careful, but it really is pretty close. And also mounts to OS2 and Windows 95. That's actually very close to being done in SIFS VFS, but these are a few cases where SMBFS is more useful. Also, notice SMB client. SMB client is useful in a few cases. It handles DFS, and there are some cases where SMB client performs very well. What about NFS? Well, NFS v3 dispatching of reads is quite good, and it dispatches more reads in parallel than most network clients, and that allows it over gigabit to use bandwidth more efficiently in single client cases. It used to be that NFS stood for not for security. That's not really the case anymore. There are ways to do GSS mounts that are Kerberized, but it is still a little hard to set up, and I think, you know, NFS v4, being able to do Kerberized mounts to NFS v4 is still a little bit rocky. The NFS write performance, though, is very interesting. There are plenty of cases where, even where caching is not a factor, large sequential writes, for example, where NFS write performance is truly awful. And part of that is due to the sync window forcing commits to disk every meg and a half. Now, why would you use SysVFS? Well, safe caching, it has op-lock support, has packet signing support in kernel. So it's very important to have packet signing in kernel, because it's very bad to say, you know, I'm in the middle of a low memory situation, I have to upcall to something that's going to allocate memory to do signing. Obviously, you can't allocate memory when you're trying to when you're in the write path, so you have to be able to do signing in kernel. And in most cases, it's better performing than there are alternatives that that have particular things they do well. The POSIX app performance is getting pretty good to Samba servers, and even to non-Samba servers with SFU emulation, there's only a few POSIX things that don't work well. And one of the things that SIFS does that SMBFS does not is it actually opens the file the number of times you ask, which helps sometimes with the read-ahead logic on the server file system. The multi-user mount option and some of the configuration options are very nice. Also, Samba, the SIFS client, keeps state, so it can do auto-reconnection after network failure. Now, one of the things that we're trying to do is improve SIFS in a few key areas, and I'm excited that our team is going to grow a little bit, so we'll have some help. But in addition, the community is starting to become more interested in and helping more, which is useful. You know, we need to make it as easy to use as this. Being able to mark these, you know, everybody's seen these kind of things from Windows. The Windows client makes marking compressed and encrypted files quite easy. Auditing events are very easy. Some of these things require extensions to the VFS. I think we'll take a big leap forward when we support something POSIX ACLs to Windows. Right now, POSIX ACL, being able to have a rich ACL model, only works to Samba servers, you know, that's a limitation we need to fix, because clearly Windows servers, we need to be able to map ACLs, the POSIX ACLs to them, and the owner information. Now, what are the big to-dos? We need to be able to map Chmod and Chown, Chgroup, to NTFS ACLs on the wire for the case where the server isn't Samba. That code is started. The worker functions are there, but the mapping code is not. And I need to call up to WinBind, which is there, but I'm not making right now, to do UID to username mapping. UID to SID mapping, excuse me. The SPNego session setup, which will be calling up a new user space helper. There's no way I'm going to put ASN kernel in code in kernel after my experience with that. NTLM v2 will leave in kernel, but the SPNego ASN stuff, there are too many security possibilities to things that could break if we left that in kernel. But we will have a mount in kernel NTLM style, NTLM v2 style, for those who require secure mounts and want to avoid having the problem that you might have in NFS, for example, where you're low on memory and you need to reconnect, but you can't reconnect because you can't allocate memory. IPv6 support is essentially done, but there's one small piece left. Finishing up the find notify that the Google Summer of Code guys did last summer for us is important. Being able to support unlock all when you're not using Jeremy's Samba server, when you're going to Windows server, being able to support unlock all of a POSIX emulated over mandatory locks. That fixes one app. Also, there are cases where you want to remove redundant opens. The SIFS client, because it sends the actual opens the app does, will break op-lock to itself. The SIFS client can do direct mounts, which helps a lot with memory utilization on large file copy, but it does it across the whole mount instead of like NFS can do over a particular file. And we also need to add DOS time conversion routines for OS2 and Windows 95 and Windows 98 to be able to return proper time information. SMB2 support would be relatively easy to add, but it doesn't buy us a lot. It would buy us fixing a few limits. But it would certainly help us to to extend the POSIX extensions a little bit more, and Jeremy and I and others have been talking about that, and we're also working better with the NFS community now. And it's interesting, we're hitting some of the same problems that the NFS community is, and the same, a lot of the same goals that the NFS community has are our same goals. You know, what are some of the holes? There are some holes still. We know about the holes in the protocol. Some of these NFS also has. But what's coming soon? In the real short term, we have NTLM v2, secure in kernel mount, and a few improvements to SFU support, basically the finish up of being able to write a symlink to a Windows server. We can do hard links and we can read symlinks, but also the SIFS 143 code, which is current, we need to do some additional testing on SLES 9 and RHEL 4, and we now produce a single module that can build across those old legacy things. And then there's some finish up of an upcall necessary to allow the Kerberized SPNego and to finish up some DFS pieces, and then SIFS ACL mapping. So these are, you know, summer and fall time frame, and these are, you know, much sooner in the next month or so. And we're running out of time, so I don't want to shoot over too much, and I realize I've gone fairly quickly through this, but I will have, I think the slides get posted to the site, right? So I'll hand these off to Volker to post. But this is actually an exciting time because it's a period at which the SIFS client is actually in some ways superior to NFS, and where Samba can show some real advantages. One of the things that's very nice about SIFS is that it can show things, performance advantages of Samba, that are really hard to spot with the Windows client because the Windows is so heavily serialized, and the Windows client doesn't make it easy to show some of the Samba performance advantages. But I tell you, if you run something like dbench, simple benchmark, you'd be amazed how much traffic a single SIFS client can generate, as much load as it can generate on Samba, because we're very efficiently using the wire. It's SMP enabled. It's dispatching most of the time 50 requests in parallel, beating the crud out of the Samba server. And it's neat to see because we're much more efficiently using our network than we ever had before. And I think it brings the possibility that there'll be many environments where Linux users will choose to use SMB SIFS mounts, SIFS DFS mounts, preferentially to other alternatives. Anyway, I thank you all for your time, and I also welcome any bugs or patches. The Samba Bugzilla is, of course, the place to submit bug info, and we are tracking that. And I think activity will pick up a lot this summer because we're adding some developers. Any questions?
Where can I find the source code of the SIFS module? Is it in the Samba SVN? No.
That's a good point. Where do you find source code for the SIFS VFS? I haven't updated the download webpage to point to more accurate information. Kernel developers keep the most current stuff on kernel.org in Git. About once every 3 or 4 weeks, I mirror that into Samba SVN. I'm going to try to automate that. In addition, I'm posting out to the download site tar.gz files of the source. So, you know, for example, if you're RHEL 4, like this particular box here, you change directory into the kernel source, make m equals the SIFS directory, and now you have a SIFS.ko, and that's all you need, one file. The source code, it will be most current in Git, but for those who don't want to use Git, you know, roughly every 2 to 3 weeks, I'm putting up a tar.gz of the source. I used to have a version for SLES 9, a version for RHEL 4, a version for FC4, a version for FC5. I went nuts with this. This was insane. I spent all my time patching stuff. So what I've switched to is one version in the kernel source without ifdefs, and one version in the tar.gz and in another smaller tree that has ifdefs that work across all kernels from roughly 2.6.4 through 2.6.16. So obviously if you're 2.6.17, you're getting it from kernel.org. But if you want a newer version, you have the choice of this one converged version that should build on most anything. One of the other things to remember, though, is that the distros themselves are selectively taking patches that we send. So the distros themselves are updating their kernels. Any other questions? So the URL, by the way, is linux-sifs.samba.org, and I'll be updating the download page with more current info.
Yeah, then many thanks, Steve.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Who is next? Ah, we're going to see about it.